Call the meeting to order.
Ridiculous.
We have a quorum, I believe, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, that's me. Mr. Sagan?
Correct.
Any audience participation?
No.
None? Need a motion for the minutes of the January 29th meeting?
So moved. Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed, same. Passes. Staff report, financial progress.
Okay, thanks, Mr. Chairman. Financial progress report was attachment 3A in the folders, and if I can direct your attention to line 9 at the bottom, you'll see that we're 4 months away from the end of the fiscal year, which ends June 30th. We've expended 69% of the budget, so we're essentially right where we should be budget-wise. Don't have any problems to report, and at this time we would ask for approval.
Second. Motion second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. Motion passes. Mr. Baker, we have a technical progress report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to give a little bit of an update on the federal situation. Today, actually, I think this afternoon, Representative Jim Renacci is going to be talking about his plan for a bill for an increase to the transportation funding. He is saying that he wants to index funding to cost of inflation for a gas tax increase, but I don't know if that actually would include an increase or just an indexing to inflation. So that'll be interesting to see what he has to say later this afternoon. Also, the House Ways and Means Committee is now trying to figure out what they're going to do if there is going to be a short-term fix and a patch to get us through, say, a three-month or six-month time period. Supposedly, they're starting to look for that money to close that gap when the trust fund does expire, which there's 66 days until MAP 21 expires. And that, I think, kind of also is a segue into this 2 weeks from now, April 9th, at the Robert K. Path Transit Center, there will be a Stand Up for Transportation rally that's being sponsored by both Metro and PARTA. And this is basically a rally about how we do need to fund transportation at the federal level. Frank from PARTA has a flyer and more information if you'd like more information on that. Locally, what you're going to see today, to begin with, are some of the first inputs into the 2040 Regional Transportation Plan. That plan is due in May of 2017, so this is the time to start getting those products developed. We're going to be working on, in the next 6 months, probably working on a bike plan update, a pedestrian plan update, freight plan update, and also congestion analysis, where we can start looking at how our projects are doing or how our locations are doing and start really thinking about what are those recommendations for the plan that'll be in 2017. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions, and thank you.
No questions and no motions necessary. The AMATS Federal Fund Report, Victor.
Thank you. Looking at our funding program table, you'll see that there's quite a few projects that have been moved. The reason for that is that we're finalizing the development of the new TIP for fiscal year 16 through 19, and one of the requirements is that each individual fiscal year is fiscally constrained, meaning that we have enough funds to cover the cost of the projects. So if you look on the second page of that table, you'll see that there's still negatives in each one of those years. Since the time that this was printed, we've moved out additional projects so that each of those individual years, 16 through 19, is a positive balance. That's a requirement that we have. What we're telling, though, our sponsors is that they keep developing their projects on their original schedule. Once TIP is approved and additional funds become available, we'd like to move those projects back up. The Tech TIP subcommittee had a meeting 2 weeks ago. The main issue they talked about was overprogramming of funds. In the past couple of months, we have contacted several MPOs and different agencies to see if we could trade funds to help bridge our gap. And at this time, there are no FPOs who are willing to trade funds with us. This used to be a relatively easy thing to do in the past. We'd make a phone call within a month or so. We could have as much money as we needed traded for any fiscal year. I don't know if that's going to be the case anymore. So there is funding out there, but a couple of the FPOs did say to come back to them in about 6 months' time to see if they want to see how their programs shake out before they're willing to trade funds. So what we're going to do then is about 6 months from now, we'll get the exact GMP subcommittee back together again, and we'll look at which projects. So we'll be about in the middle of this year, 2016, see which projects we have left to fund, see where we are with the funding, and if we can make any trades. If that doesn't happen, then we'll look at seeing which projects will get funded in 16 and which ones need to be pushed back to 2017. And another issue they talked about was the 15% increase. We do this on an annual basis on the projects. That will be more difficult in 2016. Based on all the projects that are eligible for funding, that would mean we'd have to look for an additional $2.5 million worth of funding to cover that 15% increase. And the policy also says that if funding is available, we would give that 15% increase out. So that's something else that we'll be dealing with. And that's all I have on this item.
Any questions? Again, that was for information only. On to item four, old business.
Okay. So this is the second draft of the TIP list of projects. The first draft was in January. Since that time, as I mentioned in the previous item, we had to move a lot of our projects so we get a fiscal balance. That's the main change that happened between this list and the list that you've seen in January. Again, take a look at your projects, make sure they're in there, and keeping in mind the year could be changed, could have been moved. So what will happen after this is we're going to have a two-week public involvement period. It'll start March 30th, go through April 10th. And within that time period, we have a public meeting on April 8th at the Akron Public Library. Once we go through that period, comment period, if there's anything we need to change, we'll make those changes, and then we'll come back to this committee for final approval of a complete TIP document in May.
So you're just looking for a motion on the second draft?
Correct.
Any questions? Motion?
So moved. Second.
Motion and second. All in favor? I'm sorry, any discussion? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed, like? Motion passes. New business, public participation plan. Krista.
Hi, thank you. This is attachment 5A. As Curtis mentioned, this is one of our first inputs into the upcoming regional transportation plan. This 2015 public participation plan is an update to the 2012 one. It addresses how the public can interact with AMATS, how they can get information, and how they can get involved in the transportation planning process. It specifically recognizes the special needs and those with unique populations, how we're reaching out to those and making sure it's accessible to different ethnic groups, people with limited English proficiencies. It also, we are continuing to build on our social media and website strategies. We've done quite a bit in the last couple years, and those are some of the big things moving forward that we're continuing to push as a way to get people involved with what we're doing and interact. We're also building on some of the engagement strategies such as Jane's Walk, Better Block, and the Bike and Brainstorm that get us a little more on the ground and out into the communities working with people. We did have a technical issue getting that on to our website because of a revamp in the site and issue posting it. So it was posted on February 11th, which means the 45-day public comment period ends tomorrow, the 27th. So we are requesting that it's approved and goes into effect tomorrow. And any public comments we get today, we'll make sure are considered and incorporated into the plan, and we can let you know what they are at the next meeting. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions, and we are requesting a motion for approval.
Questions? Seeing none, motion.
So moved. Second.
Motion second. Discussion? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Same? Thank you. Thank you. Next is the AMATS planning data forecast. This will also require a motion when we're done.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good afternoon, everyone. The AMATS planning data forecast is a periodic process that we go through to forecast 35 different variables, each of which has some form of impact on local traffic volume and a local traffic impact. We forecast the data through the year of our upcoming plan, which is 2040 in this case. The primary purpose of going through the process is to get data to put into our regional traffic model, which helps us determine many things, future traffic volumes, areas where there could be congestion and air quality issues. It serves a secondary purpose to help us just get some general insight into trends with the various demographics around our region for our various planning efforts. As I said, there were 35 variables, some of which we use a lot in many of the planning products that we use, things such as population, employment, median household income. Those we see pop up a lot in our things. Other ones we don't use as commonly, and this is one of the few times we really get to look at those pretty closely, things such as school enrollment, number of vehicles and workers, and variables such as that. So to forecast these, we use different methodologies depending on the variable. We have a number of data sources where we get our base and historic data at, and depending on what's available out there, sometimes we have to use different techniques to forecast different items. And most of that background data that we use to make our forecast comes directly from the Census Bureau. Population forecasts are a little bit different than the other ones in that we are constrained by levels, by county totals that are set by the Ohio Department of, the ODSA, Development Services Agency. They set county totals, and we have to stay within that. So that's kind of unique to the population variable. And then for employment, we used a few different methodologies, and we make a determination as to what seems the best based on recent trends. And there are a few limitations to some of the processes. In a single calendar year, we look back to kind of project the future. Large swings in the data, a large plant closing or something like that, can have a pretty dramatic impact on the over the time horizon that we're looking at over a pretty long period. So we look closely at instances where that happens. The whole process basically continues or assumes that recent trends will continue through 2040. You never really know if that's going to happen or not, but that's just an assumption that we have to make in this process. And we really only intervene in the most extreme circumstances. There were times where there were dramatic population or employment losses or something just looked kind of fishy. So we kind of looked closer at those and made decisions where necessary. But generally, we just kind of wanted the previous data to paint the picture of what we expect in the future as often as we could. And it's important to note that, no one has a crystal ball. These give us kind of a general outlook of, once again, how things will, maybe look in the future if recent trends hold true. But we would never make, final project decisions or put too much bearing on, these future results, because they could always change. And that would be contrary to AMATS's fix-it-first policy, where we're really concerned with, what are our problems right now. And those are, with the limited funds we have, those are the main things that we address. So some of the key results, going through the process. Now, we should note, at last week's TAC committee, the original version of this report was tabled. They brought up some good points about some issues with the employment. They didn't quite pair up with the number of workers, and they just wanted us to investigate that a little bit more. In that week, we have gone into those and made some changes and everything. We think the numbers look definitely more reasonable this time, and we've reprinted the report so you have the revised version. Also, later on in this presentation, there are some graphical maps so you can easily see things. They suggested we insert those, or we present those to the public some way, so we've now included that in the official report, too, as an appendix at the very end. So a lot of this data comes in at a real small scale level, and it's very difficult to present it in that format. That's how we have to put it into our traffic model, getting very technical. But it's difficult because at like the census tract level that we get a lot of this information at, they cross community boundaries, so you can't just isolate communities too well because of this overlap. So the numbers are more accurate at the higher scale levels, and kind of, you know, it gets a little more, there's a little more variability as you get kind of tighter and tighter down. So if we look at the region as a total, we expect trends to be pretty similar to what they've been in the past. Through 2040, we're expecting around a slight decline over the period of 3.8% and a moderate increase in employment of 7.6% over the period. And at the county level, looking at Portage and Summit counties, that we continue those trends to mimic the regional level, basically slight reductions in population and moderate increases in employment over the planning period. As I said, we take this small data, and the best way to present it in this format is, or for this report, is to aggregate it into what we've termed sub-areas. It's basically geographically proximal areas that they're pretty related to each other, and there's a lot of interaction between them. That's how we've historically done this report, and it's worked pretty well. So Summit County is divided in thirds. We do pull out some of the larger communities just for special attention. Akron, Falls, and Barberton, and then Lane County, and we divide us Portage County into quarters and kind of do those. So when we put the analysis up there, this is how the population scenario looks. We expect the strongest growth in northern Summit County. Part of that is it's strategically located, you know, between two major metro areas. It makes it kind of a good area to live, you know, depending where your commute takes you. Akron, there was a slight decline, and then in northeast Portage County, where those are the only two that we saw somewhat of a decline for the area, and southeast Portage a little bit too. Other than that, expect pretty stability or modest growth through the planning period. Looking at employment, the picture is a little rosier. There's pretty much growth everywhere except in the far eastern portion of the AMATS area. And the biggest increase we expect in both the southern portion of both counties in our area. So with this, we're recommending approval of the report. Upon approval, we will load this data into the traffic model, and that will help us with our future planning efforts, the congestion management process in particular, if you're familiar with that. And I'd be happy to answer any questions anyone may have about the process. Yes, sir.
Lou Bertrand, Hiram.
Thank you.
I noticed that our area is declining in 18% in population and also in jobs, and also Akron is over 20%. Actually, our area is almost 19% decline. Are they basing that on the birth records at our local hospitals? Is that what this is all about?
Well, we base our analysis...
Because I'm doing my part. I got six grandkids, so I...
now, one thing about the aggregation of communities is that sometimes there are unfortunate consequences of lumping communities together. We've noticed that Wyndham has experienced larger population loss than some of the surrounding communities, maybe more so than Hiram. And
Hiram gained from 2000 to 2010 mm-hmm. Almost 14% increase in population in a village.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are
instances of Portage County.
Yeah. Now, part of this is the unique constraint that we have on population. Now, our analysis, we are not looking at birth and death records that thoroughly. We've simply pulled about 10 years of historic data and just, you know, did a linear regression and kind of extrapolated that forward through 2040. As I mentioned, because we have to have consistency between all this eventually goes into the traffic model. That's the primary purpose of doing this. And ODOT has a lot of input into our traffic model, and they maintain some of that. And they've requested that we have consistency across the board in certain areas. So the ODSA has given us, they've done projections for the counties, and they're the ones, they use quite a bit more sophisticated process to determine the future populations. And they do show, they do everything at the county level. So they show Portage County actually growing or holding steady through about 2020. And then they do show kind of a rapid decline on the farther end of the horizon. And they have, you know, professional demographers that are doing this, and they definitely do take into consideration birth, death records, in and out migration. So some of these could be functions of aging populations, smaller family sizes. There's a lot more that goes into that. And in our personal, our internal analysis that we do using historic data, there has been growth. You know, we're showing growth in Portage County, but nevertheless, we've got to dial that back some because of the constraints that we have to tie to those county totals, basically. So most communities end up being dialed back a little bit. What, if you want to get technical, we projected it out, and then we calculated from our internal projection what proportion of the total county population every community had. We just took that same proportion and applied it to the level that the county is insisting that we match to, and that kind of, you know, moved everybody down accordingly. So that's kind of the process. But
well, one comment I wanted to make in connection with this projection, and a lot of folks here, maybe some of them don't know this, but you know, the Ravenna Army Arsenal, which is now called Camp Ravenna, mm-hmm. has been activated with the National Guard, training troops for activities in the Middle East. And they have, right now they're training about 3,000 troops there almost all the time. And we do have an influx of military permanent duty stations in our area in Portage County, and also the troops that are coming up here from Ohio. And I predict, it isn't too hard to predict, that we're going to increase that need within the near future and probably within the next 25 years. The other thing that I would mention is that this shows that we should do more district water, sewer, police, the whole thing to combine these, because a lot of the areas that are growing in northern Summit County are unincorporated areas and will need infrastructure. So that was just my observation.
Yeah, several years ago we did something like this, and I complained about it because I said it was erroneous and it didn't forecast what's going on in Portage County. We're right back to using the same thing again. The only thing that it makes any sense on that map for Portage County is the four counties up in the northwest corner. That's the only thing that makes any sense at all. The rest of it just is ludicrous. I mean, to think that we're, you know, it isn't based on current trends at all. Current trends say we're increasing. And that's what we've got. And I don't understand why we need to follow somebody's formula because they say we're supposed to when it doesn't represent what's going on.
I know. Well, one thing that differentiated, I worked on the last process too, and there was more manipulation. That one theoretically was not loaded into our traffic model, so we didn't necessarily have to, you know, jive with everything the state was doing at that time.
Nate, could I jump in?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So, Mickey, I remember where we had, I think it was Brimfield and Suffield, and we were showing
Brimfield's going down 6% or something like that.
Right.
Nuts.
And that was based on census estimates, and as you said, that proved to be incorrect. When 2010 came around, there was actually growth there. One thing that differentiates this a little bit from that is this is based on those control totals that come from the state, from the Department of Development. But I think your point still, basically all I told you is we have to use this control total, which you already knew, but that doesn't really address your concern, which I think is a good one, is we'll be the first to admit we're basing it on those control totals because they're doing demographic projections in Columbus. I don't know whether we really are going to lose 3.8%. I think there's always an inherent problem in long-term forecasts. I've looked at AMAT's forecast from 1965, and they were showing Akron having 350,000 people. We had all these new freeways planned. And what no one forecasted is that all the rubber companies would move out. And something similar could definitely happen between now and 2040, either good or bad. I mean, the one thing I can tell you is that when you look at the census, just there were articles in the Beacon Journal and the Plain Dealer today, our region does not look good demographically compared to almost anywhere in the United States. Every trend we're bucking almost, of like immigration and job growth and employment. So the drop in total regional population doesn't surprise me so much. But to your point, and I think it is a hard issue that we'll have to discuss, and maybe we need to do something different. And I'll stop here in a second, let you guys discuss it as a committee. But we have always shown growth in Portage County, and it is a little unusual to all of a sudden have it not just be negative, but 6% negative. So, I mean, we do have some options where we could go back to the state. We could ask for more detail about how those figures were calculated. We could present that to you. There's not a timeline. I mean, we don't have to approve this today. So we've got a little bit of time. If nothing else, it might give you a little bit, well, maybe not comfort level, but at least understand more how those numbers were calculated.
And the other thing that just doesn't jive with me is that you're showing that we're having like a 6% increase in jobs and we're going down in population. And I know that's possible. Anything's possible. That just doesn't make sense.
Well, that's assumptions that people will be working longer, that the labor force is actually growing because people are getting older, even though the population's declining. And then also we're assuming that we'll be importing more people. From, say, Stark County, the employment picture is not that good there. We've gotten more and more commuters from Stark and... But that's still another good point. I mean, how many more are we going to get versus many people?
You know, we got 12% more jobs, but nobody's living in Portage County. That just doesn't make sense.
I agree, but that may be robots, so you didn't make that.
Robots are people, too.
Yeah, well, anyways, I think we ought to table this until we get... based upon being a mayor in a town that grew 14% in the last 10 years, well, at least from 2000 to 2010, and the area where I live and don't necessarily work is growing, I just cannot understand why you'd lose 18% in the next 25 years. That doesn't make sense. And I can understand with Akron, with all due respect to Akron, the city, but I'd like to move to table this report.
Motion to table report.
I'll second it.
Second. Discussion.
If I could say something too, just the one thing is like we'll go back and we'll talk to the state about this, but the real issue is that even if we're able to change the employment a little bit, we're not going to be able to change it 40,000 the other way. You know, that's not really practical, I think, because the state's looking at it as if we take jobs, we're going to take people from some other county in their model, right? So we'd be taking away from, say, Medina County to make it look like Portage County was the appropriate, you know, what we thought it would be. So in a way, you know, we'll look at it and we can contact the state and see if we have wiggle room, but there's no guarantee that we won't come back here in 2 months and have a very similar number. I mean, it might be 0%, you know, no growth, no whatever, but I highly doubt we're going to go from 6% in the negative to 6% in the positive. I don't think the state is going to let us do that. So just, and I'm not saying it's inappropriate to table it, just to keep that in mind that when we come back, I don't think you're going to see a plus minus of 40 or 50,000 people. I think they might give an inch, but I don't know if we can take a dollar.
I just have another comment.
Yeah.
You know, Portage County has 3 institutions of higher learning, Kent State, Hiram, and NeoMed. NeoMed is now has added a pharmacy school. They got a medical school, and they're talking about bringing a dental school. That is a tremendous amount of people coming in, and Hiram College has added the nursing college, and that's why our population is growing in Hiram Village, which is affected in the area. I don't know if they're even taking that into account. And then, as I said to Ravenna, Camp Ravenna, I don't know if they even know about that in the state. They don't make a big deal out of it because we certainly don't want to put on the internet the Al-Qaeda and ISIL will find out about it. But I'm telling you, it's there because they're training 3,000 soldiers at all times over there. And that's going to increase. And you got to have people run that, and they live in the communities. The officers and the NCOs live in our communities, in Hiram, Ravenna. We see them in Ravenna all the time, and all that area. And that was, I don't know if they even took that into account.
If I could, I would really be interested in knowing if the staff could find out if Portage County is just being lumped together with Akron, based on what's going on in the city, because I fail to see, you know, are they just broad brushing and applying the same demographics to Portage County? That's what it looks like. I mean, I just don't get it at all. They do. And we're not. We're nothing like Akron. We're a whole together different thing.
I'd like to add one thing. I think if we can have some comfort what it's being used for. If it's just internal to AMATS, okay, we're going to discuss it at this group and control it to a certain degree. But if it leaves the MPO here and goes to the state level, I don't know where ODOT district or has an input here, but at the state level, what does ODOT do with the same data? And then an understanding of how they came up with the number. We may not be able to change it, but we at least should be able to explain it to the people we report to.
Sure.
Yes, I've got a question. I look at the map. And I know I don't live in Summit County, but I drive through Stowe to get there, and Stowe's not on your map. Why?
Stowe's not on the maps?
Nope, you have a Falls, Silver Lake, except but no Stowe.
Oh, well, Stowe is part of the central Summit County. We just pulled out a few of the traditionally larger cities in the community. They're just put together with, you know, similar nearby cities and everything.
Does,
so,
does this
yeah,
district
it's part of that aggregation.
Yeah,
anything else? I have a motion to table. There's no further discussion. We'll take a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Sounds like the motion passes.
Okay, and just to follow up, what we'll do, we will definitely look into how the numbers were calculated. We'll see how much room we have, if any, to modify. And what we'll probably do, too, is establish some sort of working meeting between now and May where we'll invite whoever's interested in the forecast to come, and that way we can at least present to some of you what we found prior to the actual committee meetings.
One final question, if I could. Did I understand somewhere that, did I read somewhere that it said that this was not going to determine, for instance, how much money AMATS area gets?
Correct.
So this is a standalone population?
That's only determined based on how many people the census actually counts.
Okay. The funding you get is driven strictly by the census?
Every dollar we get federally is based on our urbanized area's population, right?
Okay.
Not projection.
I certainly don't want to.
And not estimate either, just every 10 years. And hopefully those numbers are right.
I won't be here in 2040. So.
You will be with your grandchildren.
Your grandchildren. The next mayor.
Next item is draft road diet. Something close to my heart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Attachment 5C in your mail-out was the road diet analysis. A road diet reduces the number of through lanes on a given roadway. The most common type of road diet goes from 4 through lanes to 2 through lanes and adds a center turn, a two-way turn lane down the center of the roadway. It provides available space for bike lanes, pedestrian islands, bus stops, and on-street parking. It integrates multiple modes of travel and complete streets design and provides a flexibility of design that can be tailored to areas such as a central business district or to more suburban locations depending on the need of the community. There are a number of benefits to a road diet. Those areas that have implemented a road diet have seen improvements in safety through reduced crash rates and severity of crashes by lessening speeding and weaving, improved mobility by reducing delay times, improved emergency access through the center turn lane, and a road diet also accommodates multiple modes of travel and promotes complete streets and aesthetic design, as well as improved air quality. This is a diagram of a classic road diet conversion from 4 lanes to 3 lanes. In this diagram, you have 2 through lanes in each direction. After the conversion, you have 1 through lane in each direction with the center turn lane, as well as the addition of bicycle lanes in this example, while the overall roadway width remains 44 feet. This can easily be accomplished through restriping as part of a paving project at little additional cost. This is the application of a road diet on a suburban or rural street. You'll notice the bicycle lanes and the center turn lane, as well as the reduction in lanes. This is an example of a road diet for the city of Lakewood, Ohio, on Medicine Avenue. In this example, you have the center turn lane, the two through lanes, the bicycle lanes, and you also have on-street parking. And this is the central business district or urban portion of the city there. The city of Akron recently implemented a road diet project as part of the repaving on Copley Road. This 1.1-mile section of Copley Road on the west side of Akron has seen reduced speeding, crash rates, and is now safer for pedestrians. In this diagram, you see that the number of conflict points is reduced by implementing a road diet. You have in the areas where a left turn is going to be made, you only have one through lane of traffic, which increases your visibility of oncoming cars and reduces the crash rate. The left through lane in the pre-road diet version here would have cars making a left turn in the left lane, as well as the faster cars in the left lane of the through traffic, and those are separated with the road diet by the left turners using the center turn lane and the through traffic using on the right side the through lane. The purpose of the AMATS road diet analysis is to provide additional occasions for AMATS members to consider when making improvements in their communities. A draft list of road diet candidates is included in attachment 5C. This diagram on the board here are the top 10 candidates based on average daily traffic of less than 10,000 a day. There are other factors to consider, such as land use patterns, traffic level of service, the number of cross streets and driveways, businesses in the area, as well as the multiple modes of travel and community support for a road diet. Road diets have been successful in many locations due to their low cost. A road diet can be implemented by restriping the roadway. The reduced crash rates are as a result of the reduced number of conflict points on the roadway and by reduced delays. A road diet integrates multiple modes of travel and has been successfully implemented across the country for a number of years now. It's endorsed by the Federal Highway Administration as a safety countermeasure, and the staff is asking that you consider the road diet as an endorsed safety and development project type, and the staff will seek final approval and endorsement of the policy committee at the May meetings. Are there any questions?
No questions, thank you.
Wait a minute. Excuse me.
I'm sorry.
Is this, I'm not familiar with this model of what you're talking about here. We can go from four lanes to two with a center and bike lane. Does this issue also relate to a divided highway?
No, it would not be. Well, it's possible to do different things with the, if you look on the right side of the diagram here, you see the center turn lane. Depending on the land use in the area, the number of cross streets, businesses located in here, you could do different things in that center turn lane. Rather than have it the length of the entire project area, you could have a pedestrian refuge island in the middle there. Or you could have like a boulevard type street with the turn lanes at the cross streets. There are a number of different ways that this could be implemented. You don't have to have a center turn lane continuously the length of the project plan.
I guess the real question I'm asking is when you put these together to consider this inventory of what you've got, did you address yourself to four-lane divided highways or just not include those?
Well, it would depend on the community and what they were looking at. If the road was already divided, then it would be up to the community to decide whether to undivide it or however they wanted to develop it. In the case of our analysis here, we took four-lane roads in the area that had various ADTs, generally under 10,000 tends to work the best for a road diet. But depending on the land use in the area and the location, there's a wide range of designs that you could use for the road diet. So you could really do whatever you wanted, whether there was a median or not. So.
Any other questions? Thank you, sir. Item 6, Resolution 2015-05, revised. Oh, I apologize. I skipped over D. Metro.
Hi, everyone. I'm Chris Lee Ladd, the planning director at Metro RTA, and I'm pleased to have this opportunity to talk to you briefly about some of the projects that we have underway at Metro. Most of these came out of our short-range transit development plan that we recently concluded. I'm going to talk just briefly about what it is that we do here at Metro, and spend most of the time talking about a half dozen projects that we have underway. First of all, you know, we are a Summit County-focused operation. Summit County is our tax base. We're sales tax funded, so our focus is on serving Summit County taxpayers. We operate 39 fixed routes that have published schedules. That includes urban, suburban, circulator, weekday grocery buses, and a couple of express routes that operate up to Cleveland. And we also operate what we call SCAP ADA, Dial-A-Ride, demand response service for elderly and disabled residents. So these are some of the vehicle types that we use. I would just emphasize that 100% of our fleet is wheelchair equipped and also have bike racks. And we're seeing increased use of the bike racks for multimodal type travel too, which is kind of a cool thing. So we served about 17,000 passengers a weekday in 2014. And we're seeing that level of ridership continue, which is pretty strong for us. Most residents in the county do live within convenient walking distance of a Metro stop. This graphic kind of shows the areas in green that are within a quarter mile of the stop. I think it's evident that most of our service area is focused on the core cities of Akron, Cuyahoga Falls, and Barberton, and we're really trying to expand to where the out-migration is taking people, and we're striving to make sure that transit is a viable travel option and an affordable one for most county residents. I have to admit that the bottom bullet point here, I just realized, is inaccurate currently, because I saw that TARDA in Toledo is currently only charging $1 and has been $1 for 9 years, and they're currently proposing to go up to $1.25. I'll move on to these half dozen projects that we've got in progress. The first is a park and ride lot that's south of the Robert K. Pfaff Transit Center on South Broadway. This parking lot was built last fall. It's currently in operation, and there are still a few things left to wrap up there, including putting in the landscape. The ground was frozen by the time we were done, so we're still waiting for the ground to thaw before we go back to put in that landscape. This was a project that the city of Akron helped us with, along with the park and ride lot, we also rebuilt Rosa Parks Drive from Broadway over to High Street, and that provides a better pedestrian connection between the transit center and the south end of downtown. In any case, if you have a desire to go anywhere in the region that you take a bus, the park and ride provides a convenient place now to leave a car to go and do that. So this next one is the University of Akron zip card project, which was launched last year as a demonstration with the University of Akron. Essentially, they prepaid Metro to allow use of their student and staff ID cards in Metro's fare boxes for a free ride. Since then, we've watched the university-related ridership grow by more than half, and we're in the process of negotiating an extension of the program into the 2015-2016 academic year so that we can continue to partner with them. And we're also looking at expanding this type of program to other academic institutions of higher learning so that we can kind of keep growing ridership. But part of that is a strategic decision on our part, because if we can get riders to start when they're young, we hope that it can be a lifelong option for them. This just shows the three graph lines that show the type of progress report we've been providing monthly to the university. It essentially shows for every day in the service period. On the bottom line, the individual cards that were used on that day. In the line in blue that shows the most up and down, that shows the number of times that those cards were swiped. So that in most cases, each card is used a bit over twice a day. In some cases, a lot more, but mostly on the average about two and a half times a day or something like that. And the top line that shows a more gradual climb is really the unique ID cards that were used during that month. So in summary, we had about 1,000 cards that were in use on any given day, somewhere in the range of 200 to 300 get used. And of those cards, the typical ridership is around 400 to 600, which is a lot of bus trips. And like I said, if that's about half, again, more than it was before, we think we're doing a lot of good for travel to the university. This next project is a project called Call-A-Bus, and this is a service that we launched as a demonstration in the North County in 2013, and last year we extended it by adding additional service hours and by expanding the geography that it serves. And part of the reason that we did that was that we surveyed ridership near the conclusion of the demonstration, and those were improvements that they told us that they wanted to see. We had a real high level of satisfaction with the service, and again, we've seen it grow by about an order of half just in this last year after the expansion. And I guess the last point on that is that we're looking at expanding that model to other low-density areas where regular route service doesn't really make sense. And the South County is probably the area that we're considering expansion next. This next project called AVL is Automated Vehicle Location. And this is about a $3 million project that is pretty well along in implementation. This graphic that I'm projecting essentially shows what would be a dispatcher screen that shows where every bus is located along its route, and the colors designate whether they're running on schedule, behind, or ahead of schedule. This is required installing GPS units on all our vehicles, and some of the objectives are that, as this suggests, the dispatchers will know at any given time where all the vehicles are, and you know whether they're on schedule or not, how many customers they have on board, and other features will include that while you're on the bus, as you're approaching a stop, there'll be an automated vehicle announcement that will announce the stop. And more importantly, perhaps, is the user interface, so that when you're anticipating that you're going to wait for a bus, each bus stop will have a unique identifier, and you'll have the ability to text that location into the system through a typical mobile app, and you'll be able to find out when the next bus will arrive at that stop. So we're pretty excited about it. There's a lot of software complexity interchanging that has to be ironed out, and we're trying to work our way through that with the contractor, and it's working, but we've got a lot to do yet. This is really a byproduct of the AVL system, in that in order to really take advantage of the AVL system, we're going to have to replace all our bus stop signs. We have on the order of 2,500 bus stops, so this means a fairly sizable project, and so we're essentially going to have to take all our signs that are now posted on telephone poles and light standards and speed limit signs, and we're going to have to put them on our own post, and that's something that we'll be trying to accomplish this year, so that by the time the AVL system is operational, this feature also will be workable. This transit design guide, my next item here is something that we have assembled in-house at Metro. We've distributed to local jurisdictions for review and comment, and it was really put together because with all these projects that we have, we've discovered that it's not necessarily clear all the time what it is that Metro needs in the way of design requirements. And we really want to interface with local jurisdictions early in the design process on roadway projects in particular, in order to satisfy the needs of our passengers. We are still inviting input from all the reviewers. If anybody has an interest in getting the document that doesn't already have it, I'd like to share that with you. The point of this is just that buses are big, and we really need to acknowledge that in the design process to make sure that people understand where we can go with them and where we can't, and what we need to make that work. Similarly, this just shows some of the standard bus stop features that we intend to be adding. Currently, many of our bus stops have nothing more than a bus stop sign at the back of curb, if there is a curb, or next to a shoulder, and oftentimes there's nothing but a beaten down patch of mud there. And we're really trying to move toward having a more consistent landing pad and shelter where we can locate it. Currently, we've got only about 100 shelters out there, and we're in the process of trying to purchase and install more of them. This last project is the downtown circulator for Akron. We have been planning a rollout for next year, and we've tried to model it after successful circulators in other cities. Cleveland and Columbus are a couple of cities that have really successful ones, and tried to copy some of those lessons learned. One of them is that you need to have a very fairly simple, predictable routing that really hits most of your major travel destinations. It needs to be frequent. We're looking at something on the order of 10-minute frequency, so that through the middle of the day, if you want to catch a bus to go to lunch or to go to a meeting, that you could catch a bus and not have to have a schedule to know when the next one comes along. Another feature of this, I would say, is that we're trying to tie this to our park and ride lot at the south end of downtown, so that you'd have an opportunity to relieve some of the congestion that occurs during baseball games and other special events downtown, so that the bus could help alleviate some of the parking pressure. Those really are the concludes my presentation. I'd be happy to accept any questions.
Questions?
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Now we'll move on to item six. This is resolution 2015-05R, reference gasoline tax.
Okay, so this one was me. Thanks, Mr. Chairman. This resolution really does two things. It offers support for an increase in the federal gasoline tax, and it gives some policy recommendations. And it's based on a letter that I wrote to our congressional delegation last year at your behest and your request. It is important to note going into it, these are my thoughts policy-wise. So my role as a director is to give you thoughts, and your role as the committee is to decide whether you agree with those thoughts or want to modify those thoughts. So I anticipate we'll have a lot of discussion on this one. Basically, I'll just kind of go through. I won't read through this, obviously, but give you some of the high points that are recommended here. One reason why this weighs in on transportation policy as well as funding is because as a staff, we feel those two things are inextricably linked to each other. We don't want to make a recommendation to have taxpayers pay more without at least revisiting how money is spent on transportation. And a lot of what we recommend is what we've done in our own regional transportation plan and our own funding policy. So that's out here for your consideration. The biggie in this resolution is what we're recommending is a 10 cent per gallon increase in the federal gasoline tax. The AMETS Policy Committee did pass a similar resolution in 2010. To do that, it's fair to say not a whole lot's happened in 5 years in Congress on that, which you've heard periodic reports on, but I would say 5 years later, $55 billion further borrowed from the general fund of the United States, which is really money borrowed from China and from other countries. The Highway Trust Fund is even in greater trouble than it was in 2010. And I think we're not going to probably go another 5 years before Congress does something, whether that's getting rid of the trust fund and saying we just take money out of the general fund and spend it on transportation, two, we are going to raise the gas tax to some other creative revenue option. But it's fair to say the current situation is not sustainable. I think the conflict in Congress is just whether to raise taxes to shore it up. Another alternative is to spend less money on transportation, but that seems to be even less popular than raising taxes. One thing that TAC did approve this resolution. TAC did, though, add, they made a motion and they directed us to add a further qualification to the 10 cent per gallon increase and also recommend that it be indexed to inflation, so that makes that recommendation a little bit stronger. So in your folder was an attachment 6A with a 2015-05R, and the only revision to what you got mailed out was that addition about gas tax. We also make some policy recommendations. So like I alluded to before, the staff feels like it's not enough to just increase revenue, but we have to think longer and harder about how transportation policy at both the federal and the state level is working. You know, in a nutshell, we feel like the country and the state haven't really changed their policy framework since the interstate system was created in 1956. And a lot of transportation funding and projects are still predicated on, we see some congestion, we need to add lanes. We're not advocating that lanes never be added to anything. Our own funding policy continues to fund projects to add lanes, but we do feel that people are too quick to build a new road, add more lanes. The reason we feel that way is we're not a high growing state. Ohio's 44th in population. We had a lot of discussion just a couple minutes ago about the planning data forecast. Whatever the real numbers for 2040 are, it's fair to say we have neither seen nor expect to see a lot more population growth in our region. We feel like, in a way, we're in an enviable position where we don't necessarily have to put a lot of money into catching up with population growth. If I were the MPO director in Atlanta, I probably wouldn't be sitting here telling you that we don't need to expand our roadway system, although maybe they still need to think about how they do that. But here in our region, and that's one reason locally, and all of you have approved our funding policy where we do really put most of our AMATS funding into preserving the transportation system we have. We're recommending the USDOT and the ODOT take a closer look at doing the same thing here. Obviously, it's a bigger state, even bigger country. There are other needs out there. And so what we do talk about here is, you know, we kind of endorse a fix-it-first policy. You've heard us use that term before, of prioritizing maintenance over expansion. And then secondly, we also recommend that both the USDOT and ODOT consider investing more money in what we see as relatively inexpensive public transit, bicycle, and pedestrian projects. When I say inexpensive public transit, obviously public transit can run the gamut from a new rail system, which is anything but inexpensive. But what you'll find, I think, with a lot of the projects, what Chris presented was a good example, is in a lot of cases doing fairly small and inexpensive things like that app that tells you when the bus is going to come, improving transit waiting environments, more sidewalks so people can walk around neighborhoods. Those have a pretty big bang for their buck. Obviously, there's an upper limit to how much can be spent there, too. And that's one other important thing. What this resolution doesn't really do is say how on all of this. We really tried to stick to kind of 30,000-foot level. We feel it's up to people with more knowledge than us at the local level, at the state level, at the federal level, to figure out how to do this stuff. So that's why this is more kind of a 30,000-foot level policy recommendation. That really kind of wraps it up. Again, you know, the big thing in here is the endorsing the increase in the gas tax, and then secondly, kind of the policy framework that I outlined. One other thing I'll report on real quickly and then turn it back to the chair for discussion is at TAC there was a lot of secondary discussion about the need for more local revenue for transportation. So not so much the federal piece, but we heard from a lot of communities that it's harder than ever at the local level to fund projects. There was a lot of discussion about things ranging from the permissive license fee to other state funding to OPWC to the local government fund to are there other federal programs that could be created, et cetera. What TAC felt was that's a whole other can of worms, and we could have a whole other discussion about that. So TAC did recommend that the staff look into some of those issues with all of you between now and the next meeting. I think what we will probably do is, if this sounds good to you, is have some sort of a forum where we'll just get a meeting space. We'll invite whoever's interested on the committees. We'll make sure ODOT's there. We'll make sure as many of you as want to attend from the local level are there, and we'll just explore, you know, are there possibilities of growing the pot of funding locally, statewide, and how those two things interact. So I think I've probably said too much already. It's been a long meeting already, but I'll turn it back to the chair.
Questions? Keene, Mayor, with all due respect, if I could. And I think everybody and what Jason put together, obviously from the AMAT standpoint for 2015-05R, and Jim and Sebring are helping pass out some handouts. But if you do notice what was sent out in the italics, TAC approved the resolution as amended with one dissenting vote, and obviously that dissenting vote was ODOT. Much like all your communities that you do live in, I mean, if you take a look, and I'm going to go through here, and again, I'm going to hopefully spend a little less than 5 minutes, point out some of the things that we are doing in ODOT to address these situations where, in fact, to make light of it or a joke, but who came first to fix it first, AMATS or ODOT, but this is something that we've been talking about for a long time, is it even ingrained in our policy. But that being said, again, we, with all due respect, obviously, I don't know what's going to happen at the end of my presentation today or other questions we may have. I'm not helping to table the resolution. I'm looking to continue the dissenting vote. And back from my time when I did work in city government, vote your conscience, I guess, when we do vote. But one thing I heard the city council that I like. But basically, in a nutshell, 2015 OR, if you do pull out attachment 6A, I'm going to go through some of the things. First, AMAT's recommendation was talking about reorganization of TRAC. In fact, for those of you who do not know, TRAC has been in existence since 1997. It's a program that is administered by ODOT Central Office. Jennifer Townley is our Deputy Director of Planning, some of you may have dealt with her. Jim Gates is the program manager. They oversee it. What TRAC does, and was established under the first directorship of Director Jerry Gray, is our major new capacity project selection process. Many of you were in the room when the director came up or may have heard me speak. We get a lot of requests. We get a lot of requests for new roads. We get a lot of requests for capacity. As the director says, they're all going to bring economic development and joy and peace to Mudville. But with that being said, we just didn't have the money. 1991, we had a long laundry list of projects that we just couldn't do, and that was really, truly when TRAC started in his mind. It took us a long time to get it there, but the council was established by ORC. In 97, at our request, obviously, ODOT's permanent body of predominantly non-ODOT personnel, which develops and modifies project selection process, which approves major new projects for funding. If you go to the ODOT website, right smack dab in the middle, the director's face is off to the side, the TRAC logo is right in the middle. So please, I ask all of you, if you'd like to, click on TRAC. You can see not only the success we had with it, but what it was created for and a lot of the history of it. If you turn to page 2 on 6A of the AMATS handout, it does state under a new federal and state highway transportation policy framework. First paragraph, namely a fix-it first program that prioritizes maintenance of existing roads and bridges over expanding highway capacity. When you go to the TRAC website, look at it, you will see on page 6 under our criteria with ODOT strategic initiatives, I will be reading verbatim here. The first thing we have to do after we set our strategic initiatives, this is the department, we have to run those by TRAC. We now call those critical success factors. TRAC does that. What TRAC has to do when they select the projects, they have to link those projects to our critical success factors. Our first criteria under that linkage is system preservation. This is from 1997, says in the change that I checked. The department is committed to the preservation of its existing infrastructure by embracing a fix-it-first strategy. Preservation and management of the existing system shall be accomplished by funding system preservation needs first and providing funds for new construction only after the basic maintenance needs of the existing transportation system are being achieved. Thus, we must annually go in there. We show the TRAC, non-members, we're not the ODOT members, that we are fixing it first, that we're not being irresponsible, that we're not just blocking lines, that we're not just building interchanges without local or government communities of commitment, that we're out looking at the other factors that are involved, safety, mobility, economic development potentially, traffic demand models, all sorts of things that are going on. So that's a good thing, and again, we'll get to the chart. If you flip over to page 3, there are a couple of allegations in there that ODOT's never really looked beyond the completion of the interstate highway system. Both programs continue to encourage the addition of more and more highway capacity in a state that is no longer growing, a region of the state that is shrinking. Not to upset Mickey Moore, except for Portage County. We know that's getting bigger. So. But with that being said, we have opened up TRAC to everybody. In that, you can go to TRAC, the Ohio Department of Transportation, Rail Development Commission, MPOs, county engineers, transit authorities, county commissioners, municipalities, port authorities. The only people that we do not allow to go to TRAC to make a presentation is a private citizen. But within the rules, policy, and procedures, we ask those private citizens to go to the government agency to go to TRAC to be able to help us out or to be able to see if we can help them out. So what we're looking at right here without the wholesale reassessment of the track and the major new capacity is what I'm trying to tell you is that we have to look at fix it first. We have to look at our system before we add anything. And then when you look at the track numbers for ODOT District 4, again, I'm speaking on behalf of the department here, but my data is just for District 4. Since track got started in 1997, $740 million have been invested into this district, into our six-county area. One of the things we do with that fix-it-first mentality, the preservation, unlike our friends to the north, the Turnpike, when they did their major new, so to speak, when they did their additional capacity, they did not rehab the existing two lanes. That's why they have the issues right now. $740 million that we put into it, only 30% of that money went for additional capacity. All the other stuff went to preservation. As you'll see right now in our three projects that are coming up off the Turnpike Infrastructure Commission bonds, Mahoney-Trumbull 80, which is going to sell some of 271, which is the ad lane, and then eventually Main Broadway. Main Broadway is all going to be just rehabilitation. There is no additional capacity of that $103 million project. So with that, of the $740 million that they've invested here in District 4, only $219 million, or 30%, has gone for additional capacity. The other 521% has been for the preservation of the existing system, or on 271, for example, where we're doing the work right now, it's for the preservation of 271. Now, if you break that down into AMATs only, that's $354 million for the projects we have going on, of which only $75 million over the last 18 years have gone to additional capacity. Of that money that Track has given out, $279 million have been for preservation. Even a more staggering number than this, and just into AMATs again right now, of the projects that have come to Track and have been awarded, personally, our responsibility district force, 4,900 lane miles, we have only added 0.003 of new capacity through all the money we invested. Everything else that came through Track was for the preservation of our system. So with that, I go to the one chart that I want to show because I want to tell you what we are doing looking forward, and this leads a little bit to the, oh, for those of you who don't know, the state transportation bill has made it out of, don't quote me exactly on this if you follow it, but it's out of conference. I believe the House is going to sign it. The governor has to sign it for April 1st, 31st. There is no state gas tax in that bill. There's not going to be one. I mean, it's basically out, so there is no state gas tax. Ours has to sit 3 months, 90 days, before the GRF funding comes out. So we're basically done from the state side of gasoline tax. Made it out of the House and the Senate. But if you look at this chart, as everybody here knows, I think ODOT is the best at acronyms. We call this the MOAC. This is the mother of all charts. What basically this tells you is what we've been doing, and actually it goes back. You can see the first one came out in 1999 when I was here previously. Just keeps moving. And what this basically tells us is where our money is going. The reason that it was submitted October 24th, 2014, that's when we have to submit our budget. So it's been down there being kicked around. Total disclosure, this is not what it's going to look like after it comes out of our transportation bill. The Highway Patrol has $91 million of some of the money in there, and it looks good. There's nothing in here. Dig their gun. They do take some of your gasoline tax and our gasoline tax money. With that being said, this isn't going to be final when it comes out. It's going to be pretty darn close. With that said, as you can see on here, the spikes in the yellow is our major new programs. 06 through 10 was when the state gas tax was, during the Taft administration, was increased for the transportation and some of the projects that I talked about, which had preservation in it, but had to fix it first, along with additional capacity, start 77, a little bit of mounting 80, and some of State Route 8 projects were in there. That's that spike. The spike you see in 13 or 14 was our first turnpike bond sale. 2018 is when we're projecting right now our second turnpike bond sale. But as you see, as you go all the way across, the preservation program keeps increasing. Another reason you see some of the spikes in there is what you've heard me say in speeches. We have taken a concerted effort at saving money internally. We've gone from approximately 8,000 employees in 91 to about 4,500. But that's what we're going to stick at. But 4,500 still, with, as you, most of you all know, cost of living raises and everything, you're going to keep getting eaten up, and you still see inflation. We're seeing cost of living, we're seeing inflation with our bids. Because we have so much work out there, we're not getting as good of bids as we got in the past, but all those factors add up. People aren't driving as much, you're getting more fuel-efficient cars coming in, so there's a lot of issues that we're looking at. But when you go out to 2019, you see the money in Track, as you stand right out, the forecast goes away. That gets to that last presentation that I was going to give you, these two pages. What this is this is our internal plan to fix it first. What we're going to be doing, and we started right now with our own maintenance forces and then with our planning group, which Steve is running. And if you go to the second page, our transportation asset management plan is truly a new way to embrace this. We are the first state doing what the federal government asked everybody to do with asset management. And what we're going to be looking at is different treatments to the roadway systems that extend our money. Again, if everything goes well, you see what I highlighted on the second page, with our crews, again, with additional monies that we're able to utilize with our own maintenance crews based on our force count limits raising, we're going to be truly going after bridge cleaning, sweeping, deck sealing, crack sealing, chip sealing, and under drain cleaning. with our existing workforce. The only new hires we're going to have outside of engineering positions is going to be with our highway technicians to be able to do this in our six-county area. But we believe statewide by implementing these strategies, again, another day, you want to have Steve, myself, Jim come out, or even our highway management position out, we'll talk about it. We believe this will save us $200 million to where at the end of the year, that preservation dollars, we got to keep those going. And we constantly look, and that's where, again, on behalf of the department, I want to make a presentation to let, put the information out there. But when you do read some of what was in the memorandum, which we got a couple days before the TAC and before our dissenting no vote, to think that we're just stuck in the 50s or the 60s of the highway system just isn't true. We easily could be sitting back right now hoping for a gas tax, but I'm telling you, when you want to have a when you have a good time, try to roll this out to 450 people that you're changing the way we're doing business. This is just in our district, the District 4, but along the state. You're going to see a different attempt to have us spend our money, to work more in-house, and to do as Jason says, to fix it first, which I believe we've been doing all along. I will say right now that everything is done, and myself and Steve can ask any questions. We are a little bit of the, our own fault. We do promote the good jobs. I was a public information officer, as many of you know, my degrees in journalism. That's what gets the press. Chip stealing State Route 166, I think, in one of my counties way out east, isn't going to get quite the notoriety you need for adding a lane at 7271 for the 150,000 drivers who get caught up every morning. So, are we doing this? Yes. Are we promoting this? Probably not as good as we should be. But again, I believe on behalf of the Department of Transportation, we're looking forward and gladly help any local governments, as I believe we've been doing over the last 4 years and 3 months, any way we can to not necessarily do it the way we're doing it, but at least to give you some assistance to be able to do it more. So, with that, thank you, Jim.
Thank you. Mayor?
Yes, thank you. First of all, I'd like to commend ODOT for the work they do and the effort they put into this. So I understand, and I think I'm getting more understanding why you were upset about it. But the conclusion that Jason put on the back, I think it was on page 4, is ODOT opposed of the 10% request that we send to the federal government to increase
the
gas
tax?
Pardon me?
Yes, we would still have a note to send.
So it's just not the language, it's the whole concept of everything.
Correct.
I mean, unfortunately, with today's federal government making cars go more mileage down the road, the gasoline has to go, instead of used to be when we were growing up, 15 miles to a gallon, now it's up to 35 to 40 gallons, so definitely is an issue on getting more money. The electric cars on the road, I know Mayor Kufka is not here, who's always a promoter of, you know, these electric cars. There should be a way that we should be able to do some type of surcharge to mileage across the roads, not just in gasoline. Will that ever happen? I highly doubt it in our tenure here, but I definitely the road. I was with the director a week ago down in Columbus at a meeting with the Northeast Ohio mayors, and he brings up the lack of money. So the only way to get more money is to at least try to convince our federal government to either give us some, because it's not going to come through, as you just said, through our state. You say more take it away from the local governments, and maybe we get it out of the rainy day fund out of Columbus, but that's not going to happen either. But so, you know, portions of this, I truly believe we have to speak out to go forward with a 10% or 10 cents per gallon or some mechanism to try to get more money. Because you don't have it.
Mm-hmm.
You need it. And this is a tool that maybe nobody will listen to us. We did it. I was here in 2010 when we did the first motion. And it really didn't work anyway. So with that, I'm not sure where I'll go with this.
Thank you.
Yes, I would like to just make a couple of comments. First of all, I'd like to acknowledge and thank ODOT. And I think ODOT's situation is a little different than the locals. Money-wise, I think it's pretty clear to me anyway that they sit in a little better place financially than at least the counties do. And I think it would be safe to say the same is true for cities and other villages and townships, if you will. But the fact of the matter is everybody in this room knows we are all partners in the transportation business. You can't get to where you want to go on a state highway. You can't get to where you want to go on a city street. They're all integrated, they're all together, and they all need to be addressed and brought up. There's a lot of local folks in this room who have needs. I certainly am one of them, and I look around the room and see folks that are in a similar position as me. So I certainly could use more money. We certainly could use a larger federal program. You know, we would like to be able to do more federal projects than we do. We simply have a match problem, and maybe that'll help us with some additional money we got. But I certainly would support this effort, and perhaps one of the biggest things that I would support is that there has never, in my 25 years of being in this business, we have never, ever had a revenue source that was tied to a rate of inflation,
right,
so that it was increased based on the economy that we live in. Up and down, you know, that I don't have a problem with that. I think everybody in this room knows which way that's going. But the fact of the matter is we've never had that. So what's happened? I've seen us go to Columbus on several occasions to try to get more money. Every time we go, the same scenario happens. We do a study. We determine we need X amount of dollars for each county. The legislature sees it. They question us. They give us maybe one-third or one-fourth X. And then we wonder why we didn't get better, or we wonder why we're not able to do the job. We've never been given what we need. On top of that, we've never had any hedge against inflation. So we constantly go backwards. That's what's going on right now, with a lack of adequate infusion of capital into local infrastructure and these harsh winters we've been having. We are having problems, folks. It's that simple. We need a little more money to be put into our roads and our bridges. And I would support this resolution because of that.
Yeah.
Chairman Roberts, thank you very much. And the City of Hudson would like to thank the Director of Amendments and the Amendments staff for their continued vigilance on this. The City of Hudson was supportive in 2010 of the advocacy for an increase. But my comments today have absolutely no reflection on whether Hudson is supportive or not supportive, but they do relate to the fact that on Tuesday morning at 11:47 a.m., the email went out. On Tuesday evening, the City of Hudson had a workshop meeting, but it was not in a basis where we could add this to the agenda to talk with our council. Our council president, the Honorable Hal Desisor, has respectfully requested that there be a postponement in the consideration so that the Council of Hudson and all other communities can share this with their councils and have the discussion. As we are here, Ms. Howington, our city manager, who you met earlier before my arrival, and I are here today to request the possibility and the respect of this organization to postpone any decision or motion until the meeting on the 14th. We've already scheduled this for a discussion at our workshop meeting for our full council. We represent that council in the City of Hudson, and we have it scheduled on the 14th of May. The 14th of April, rather, for discussion, so that we can represent Hudson appropriately with our vote. So that's our request. If there is a motion today to move forward, I will add a motion to table the group gathered either agrees to that or not. If it's not agreed to delay until the 14th, unfortunately today we will have to abstain from the vote because we do want to give our council a chance and they've asked to discuss this. So I wanted to add that we certainly have been studying the needs of the AMEPS area, and we understand the critical need for funding for infrastructure, not just here, but across the United States. We read many articles about it and the calamities that we're about to face. So we understand that, but we do need time to discuss it.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments?
I just have one comment. You know, I think we're sitting around, and one of the big problems we've been all experiencing is the change in local government funding. We have lost in our community a substantial amount of it, more than 50%, more like 65-70%. We're all in the same situation. We all have, as Mickey has mentioned, problems with our roadways. I mean, this winter has been really difficult, and I'm sure we're all facing the same thing. Where do we get this money to do the improvements? It's not there, and it's a real problem. The other thing that I wanted to mention is that, sure, 10 cents a gallon is great, but, you know, the real damage to roadways is weight and use, and that 10 cents per gallon may not represent that anymore because we all can't run turnpikes and charge by the miles, you know, and by the weight. So, you know, I don't know what the answer is, except it's a real problem. We've lost money in terms of the local government fund, which was set up in Ohio in the 1930s from the sales tax to help local governments. And we aren't getting that money anymore. It's gone to the state. But there's a motion to table, and I think that takes precedence.
I
haven't
made a motion to table.
No, second.
There was no motion. It might be just by agreement that we wait until the May 14th meeting so that all councils, including Hudson's, has a chance to have this.
It's easier for me to not refer to this. If I understand right, this is basically for major roads. So are people like Ravenna going to have to try and raise their own money extra for roads that Mickey tried? This is what I'm saying. Is this basically just for the major roads? We, up our local roads, how are we going to survive? I know that my little village, we have a riot of time. I won't talk about this. But this is my question. If it's great to have 271 14 always in front of the guests, but the local communities, we're surviving the old city.
And maybe I can take it back. Until the bill passes, it could be attached to all kinds of restrictions on its use. So I can't, I don't think anybody else can actually answer that.
No, no, it's up in the air.
It's still
passed. I'm just offering this as an idea. You know, where is
it going to fall? Well, that chart shows where, from the LODOT standpoint, the $3.8 billion that we provided up.
In the federal tax discussed here, that is just for major roads, to your point. Right. Anything further?
I'd just like to say that I think the presentation, you know, what Tony did, I think we all should take a look at that. And as with the other resolution that we just tabled, our motion we tabled, I concur with Mayor Kern. Maybe we should table this and wait to the next meeting.
And a motion to take any motion to table that I would present would have coming off the table for the May 14th would not be in this table. Clarify that. I'm sorry, the May 14th policy.
Question, if I could, please. Currently, do we know when this is supposed to be acted upon by Congress? Unless, obviously, this time.
We heard earlier that at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning.
I think, and Curtis can correct me if I'm wrong, Mickey, but I think that Congress, I think they have another decision point in late May. Does that sound right? Yeah, but I think everything we've read.
You can read what I just read. It's right there.
Everything we've read, they're going to do a continuing resolution. And so I don't anticipate Congress doing anything major before May 14th.
And we understand that this committee is deciding that this is time sensitive today. It's not the information we need. The requirement request to postpone any decision or motion, vote on the motion, May 14th would certainly fit into any of the activity of our Congress, for sure.
So far, I have not heard an official motion.
I can't motion to table unless there's a motion. Okay, so if somebody would motion, it would motion to table. Well, you put it on, and then it's on the table, off the table, but it's officially on.
Gene? What's the significance of the May 14th? I'm sorry, is it just your council meeting?
It's the next policy meeting. Oh. It's the next policy meeting. We actually have it on our agenda already.
Yeah, that's
requested okay. It to be on our agenda, the Hudson City Workshop agenda on April 14th. So we're officially discussing it at that time.
Sure. How about the mayor? I'm going to discuss resolution 2015-05R as is currently written.
Is there a second?
Second.
It was a please the chair. I would like to make a motion to table this motion and any decision until the next policy meeting of the MS until that is May 14th.
May 14th. Discussion on table.
Is there a second to that?
Second.
Oh, there's a second. Now, is there discussion? Dave?
What's the negative effect of tabling? If there is none, this will just get the Columbus later then?
The negative effect seems to be we're doing exactly what we're accusing Congress of doing.
Right.
We can pan down the road another 2 months. We've been talking about this since 2010. We need a gas tax. I need money for local roads. I got two roads about to close. Yellow Creek Road is half open now with a traffic signal, and I have gaps in pavement that are 17 inches deep. I got Wheatley Road right behind. These are roads that I do not have millions of dollars to fix.
It's not the intention of the city of Hudson to make this motion to, quote, kick the can down the road. It's to provide the appropriate opportunity for our council to have a discussion of the request by MX to support this issue.
We have a second. Any further discussion? On the motion to table, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Oh, you
aye.
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 Better do it by hand.
Show of hands, please. Yes. All in favor, please raise your hand. To table.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
5. And opposed?
Thirteen. Against tabling.
So the tabling is failed. We're back to the original motion.
Thank you, everybody, for their consideration.
Discussion on Joe Paradise's motion to accept as written 2015-05R. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same?
No.
Show of hands. All in favor?
You got one behind you.
Fourteen.
And opposed?
Chairman, I request that you ask for abstentions.
Abstention? I apologize. That's our added vote. Thank you. as we talk about the close of this, this specific issue, Jason is going to try and put together something not only for this issue to fully understand it, but equally talk about the other portions that are unfederally classified and how we fund those. So in the next 30 days, hopefully we can get a working session together to discuss it. All right. Resolution 2015-06. Dave?
Thank you. Attachment 6B is Resolution 2015-06. This is hopefully our last amendment to the current TIP. This is amendment number 22. This amendment adds two new projects, revises the schedule to two projects, and revises the funding to one project. The two new projects being added are Boston Mills Road, and which is a new resurfacing and widening project in Boston Township. Construction is engineering is scheduled in fiscal year 15 and 16 using $123,000 in federal land funds. The other new project is the State Route 8 bridge. That's the big high-level bridge. This is a new study in Akron to look at the various ways to replace and realign that bridge in the future. That study is scheduled in fiscal year 15 using $1.1 million of major bridge funds. Two projects that are being, the schedule is being revised to is Prospect Street in Portage County. Resurfacing and sidewalks is moving from 17, fiscal year 17 to fiscal year 15. Springdale Road bike lanes, construction is being moved from 16 to 15. And State Route 91, Phase 2 in Twinsburg, the cost of engineering is being increased from $20,000 to $60,000. If there's any questions, I'd be glad to try to answer them. The staff does recommend approval.
Questions?
So moved.
Second. Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same. Hearing none, motion passes. Other business? Motion for adjournment? Second? Second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
You're adjourned. Thank you.